CIA agent. Of course, CIA agents who testify to Congress die of cancer. At least in the case of Jim and Elsie Wilcott. So he said, "I will never forgive and I will never forget." And I told him I would help him get this story out. So let me read it. AIDS, cryptonyms, plausible denial, and CIA. Jim Wilcott, former CIA officer. Well, I think we've had a very long and busy night, so I plan to shorten what I was going to say quite a bit. My wife and I worked for 9 years in the CIA, from 57 to 66. 3 years at headquarters, 4 years in Tokyo, another year at headquarters, a year in Miami Station. We resigned in protest over what the CIA was doing. Yeah, 4 years in Tokyo, another year at headquarters, a year at Miami Station. We resigned in protest over what the CIA was doing. We were both involved in operations. While I was in support and my wife worked in operations, I was trained in surveillance, surreptitious entry, clandestine meetings, that kind of thing. I think what is really, you know, people have told me, well, look, if the CIA was really behind this, well, we could just file a FOIA report and find out about it. Well, the way the CIA is organized and constructed, you know, it's really ludicrous, and you'll never find out anything that way. The CIA was organized on three basic principles: need to know, plausible cause for denial, and compartmentation. Need to know is nobody knows anything about a certain project except the very people who must need to know. Plausible cause for denial is that no official or employee of the agency is in any way, shape, or form associated with any kind of operation or project that's called the Black Project. Compartmentation means that every unit is completely separated and compartmented from every other unit. And that's why people who work in the CIA who work right next to other people and who were doing certain projects never had any idea that that kind of thing was going on. Everything was done by use of cryptonyms. Pseudonyms were used. My name was Robert K. Frazillo. That's the only name that appears on the records. Aliases were used. You know, when the CIA put someone undercover, which they did all the time, this would be backstopped. For instance, if somebody was supposed to be working for such and such a company, there would be a telephone number that you could call and somebody would answer. If somebody got a license under an alias, there would actually be a name. That name would be filed in the Motor Vehicles Bureau. Every state has a whole block of license numbers and so on. I would like to give just a little tiny scenario about things might happen. Let's say under a project outline, the project, let's say the AIDS project, might be called something like JD Gold. Under JD Gold, we would have targets like AM1, AM2, AM3. AM1 aim might be gays. Number 2 aim might be, say, intravenous drug users. Number 3 aim might be, let's say, people in Zaire. None of these three people would know who the other person was. Let's say they use under the TSD sections, we would have our project's outlines. It might be something like SR6. Nobody would know, not even the teams. Let's say they were going to, well, I would envision spraying bathhouses with AIDS, for instance, or spraying shooting galleries with AIDS somehow. I think anybody could think of a lot of different ways to do it. I think what Cantwell suggested was really good. So I gotta go to the cover and read what it says here. This is from the Conference on Government's AIDS War. I picked it up at the Black Box Saturday night at Sue Supriano's organized a... It was a 9/11, had Reva Entine on the panel and a bunch of other people. So Paul Berdino had the table, and that's where I got this. And it has Dr. Alan Cantwell, MD, author of AIDS and the Doctors of Death and the Cancer Microbe, Brett McCabe, AIDS in the Fourth Reich and the History of Chemical Biological Warfare, Pat Carey, the Nazi Holocaust against the Jews likened to the AIDS War, Jim Wilcott, former CIA officer in Japan on AIDS, cryptonym, plausible denial, and CIA. Carl Minkel, Francis Collins, Paul Brundino, moderator, TV, and I just got bumped off here on my subject because they were saying that, well, we don't know. So when we have a insider who makes testimony, then that matter of the record, and somebody says we don't know, then hold it, we have a job of education here. So this is what he said at the conference. Now, that is the context in which I'm reading these scenarios that the powers that be in this country historically use. And so he's speaking from experience when he's saying this is what the CIA has done, all these kinds of things. And then he makes a reference to Cantwell, which I can't get into. So going on with Jim Wilcott's AIDS, cryptonyms, plausible denial, and CIA. Well, I think this all boils down to, I'm going to make this really short, what the CIA more, there is no other suspect that has the means, the motive, the opportunity like the CIA does. And I think we are going to have to use a very, very different method to really find out where it is. Because everything in the CIA is set up to avoid detection. I think that's all. Thanks very much for listening. It's been a long night. Well, then he goes on. Well, I could say in 1981 and 1982, both my wife and I went to Cuba. My wife had one of these fantastic IQs, was just about a perfect memory. She remembered everything that had come out about AIDS. When the Cubans were telling us about swine fever, they were at that time in the midst of killing every pig on the island because it had been infected with swine fever that they believe had been done. Well, Elsie freaked out. She said, that's AIDS. She believed right from the very start that AIDS was a project of the CIA. The evidence and the speeches she used to give to me about what the Cuban doctors had told her and the similarities between what she had heard. When we went back in 82, they had more discussions with some of the top medical people in Cuba, and she had a lot of more discussions. My wife died of cancer in 86. I believe the cancer is very, very strange. I believe the CIA poisoned her with cancer. So I believe that the CIA has cancer as a murder weapon. So maybe that's enough. We've had a long night.
So, to the first call.
And the news about Venezuela, they're going to Bitcoin to get around our sanctions after we assassinated their leader, Hugo Chavez. And the cancer weapon project was, that was evidence from the Germ Warfare Forum in San Francisco a few decades back. And I'm going to go to the Vicky Huff interviewing Abby because she was in Venezuela. So that was the ramped up war against Venezuela has the cancer weapon in the background. The ramped up war in Syria has Turkey practicing genocide against the Kurds, and they are notorious for their Armenian genocide, empowered by the fact that Dennis Hassert was a pedophile and they had the goods on him, and for 10 years he was able to run interference for Turkey, which is now waging genocide against the Kurds, while the UN and the left R2P rapistas are screaming crocodile tears for the medieval child rapists of the Arab Sting. Uh-huh. In the background, that's the dirt. Whenever they say Hillary dirt, they never talk about what it is. Well, it's the Saudi funding of the Clinton election and assassination campaigns, the violation of the laws against conspiracy to murder internationally protected persons, but mostly the Bernie theft is what Seth Rich is the focus of in this Mouse Report, Endless Bad News and Horror Story.
If Paul Manafort had an email stating, I'm definitely for making an example of a suspected leaker, whether or not we have any real basis for it, and then an RNC staffer died, and they called it a botched robbery, shot in the back, nothing taken, a laptop confiscated by the FBI or the federal government, because Rod Wheeler doesn't know if the laptop is with the FBI or the DC police. Why the FBI would be involved at all points to something other than a botched robbery. Then you have the issue of nobody, no security cameras, no, nothing, because there are sensors, sound sensors, that can track shootings in DC. I did a segment on this a while back. So they can find out even the caliber of the gun. They can also, I mean, there around that area, there are cameras. So nothing is picked up either by the sensors or by the camera, by the cameras in the surrounding areas. There's over $100,000 in rewards. You mean to tell me for a botched robbery with over $100,000 in rewards, that there's nothing that would help the DC police? See, that's the thing here. It's actually the conspiracy theorists are the people who claim it's a botched robbery. There's nothing to indicate it's a botched robbery other than no items were taken, which actually undermines the notion that it could be a robbery. And the whole point of a botched robbery is, well, I said this in my last segment. Please go ahead and share my last segment on this. It's already over 20,000 views, but it should be, if in my humble opinion, 100,000 views. These segments completely follow YouTube guidelines and completely follow the guidelines of rational discussion. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton pulled the trigger. Even if I did, Vox would say, well, you know, it was important because it showed how horrible guns were, and now we need more gun control because a person's life was taken by Hillary Clinton pulling the trigger. You see, oh my God, the magnificent ways that Hillary works. They would spin anything. They would say, oh, she didn't mean to. She was in the getaway car, but she didn't mean to. They were going to McDonald's or something, or, you know, they were going to the supermarket late at night. They would spin everything. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton ordered the hit. What I am advocating is that people ask questions because a person was murdered. That's a murder. Now, see, whether it's CrowdStrike, Fusion GPS, consultants like the Awans, who are now very much a part of another server scandal, and information to classified intelligence outside the U.S. government. I wrote a book on that. The Awan Brothers and W. Wasserman Schultz. My books are below. All of
this from the Urban League.
Absolutely right. Let's move on to the next story. This is the next slide where they're basically trying to lynch Keith Ellison for having had dinner with Farrakhan years ago. My goodness, reminds me of what they tried to do to Ajamu Baraka when he was the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, because he's been on my radio show. Anyway, let's move on to the Ukraine, where we have a little flashback here. The people involved in the sniper incidents that launched the coup d'etat in Ukraine, supported by your tax dollars, Americans, are now admitting that they were firing on both sides to destabilize the situation.
Yes, and this and the next story, which is a primer on the long history of U.S. intelligence using false flag snipers, and not just U.S. intelligence, but probably NATO and definitely Israel's in the mix, is a key to understand, especially in the ramping up of Syria and the attention around the violence in Syria. Syria also was originally instigated in many ways by apparent multiple false flag snipers. And there is a lot in here, things that I didn't really know about, and I think are really, really important to understanding the dynamics of regime change or destabilization efforts
that start with later on he's having his three-year-old say, look, the tower has disappeared into dirt, a pile of dirt, but the dirt that they mention, well, that's another line, but Dixiocracy Now! And CBS are screaming pea soup about another chem attack. And I have to go into some of that background because chlorine and acetic acid are left after the parasympathetic nerve impulse that shuts down heart and breathing. So the doctor on the CBS, on the bullshit corporate media said, the baby has constricted pupils. Okay, this means the baby has a functioning nervous system. Dead people have dilated and fixed pupils. And any doctor is going to know that. So if you got constricted pupils, you can do basic life support. You're not dealing with a corpse. You're dealing with a living baby. If it's got constricted pupils, it may or may not have sarin, okay, which is organophosphate. It's not that sophisticated. It's the stuff that we used up in the forest to kill bugs. I was bidding on a cone contract, and they were going to put this stuff in the trees we were going to be working with, so I was looking on the box. The treatment is atropine. It's all called belladonna. It's from Deadly Nightshade. Belladonna means the beautiful woman has dilated pupils. And of course, someone is interested in you, their pupils will dilate. So that's a little basics on the basics of basic life support. You cover the baby's mouth and nose with your mouth and you blow in. You don't need to be told these things. You don't need to be a doctor. You don't need to be a CPR instructor like I am, or even trained in CPR, because when probably a century ago, the author of Warriors of the Rainbow, Vincent Brown's father, was a doctor on an Indian reservation. The chief's son had pneumonia and was dying, and the doctor blew air into the child so that he could breathe. Okay, so that's all you got to do. And compression on the chest makes the blood go round, and then the liver will clear out the toxins that are constricting your pupils. But you don't stick a bunch of 13 punctures into this baby. I mean, it's not these snuff films are then pointed to as the basis. Now the the white helmets are referred to in this CBS bullshit, and they are created by the it was created in Turkey. So right now we have Turkey genocide against the Kurds, but the UN, what are they screaming about? These axe-murdering medieval child rapists are getting bombed, and they're not mentioning that. They're just saying, oh no, this horrible socialism, the countries in the post 9/11 hit list. But anyway, James Le Mesurier is a British security special, ex-British military intelligence officer, and he founded the White Helmets in Turkey, where the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service's death squad army are invading Syria, their neighbor, part of the Yunnan plan. Let's frack all the countries around our murder puppets. So there's these two articles, Global Research, Syria's White Helmet, Soft War by Way of Deception, the Nonprofit Propaganda Industry, and the other is from Mint News Press. So they cited May Day Rescue as the source of this supposedly sophisticated information about the sarin that is also, okay, it's pesticide. It's the same organophosphates that that you've been using for, 50 years or whatever. But let me get to this critical thing about they give this supposedly authoritative source, but Netflix, down the page. Okay. Le Mesurier, this is the end of the mintpressnews.com. James Le Mesurier, British ex-military mercenary, founded White Helmets. Lemurier, for his part, has apparently become tired of the limelight, perhaps as a result of the thorough debunking of the terrorist-linked organization he fostered. Though still listed as an employee of Good Harbor, Lemurier has removed himself from the site of May Day Rescue, a white helmet-linked organization he founded, and all mention of him has been erased from the White Helmet's website. So the corporate media... KCBS, 60 Minutes from Sunday night, is touting this as if it's another, it is another, exactly as the same. When the children in 2013, Drone Bomber was pointing to, they had been kidnapped in Latakia and identified by their mothers before they were used to stage this, only swallowable by the total idiots. And remember... This is swallowing by the same people that swallow the lie of the big lie behind the WTC pentabomb, that somehow box cutters, mean that steel frame structures are no longer safe from fire. You better insulate your fire grates, kids, because the laws of mass and nature have changed. Two drones knocking down three buildings and all that, and thermite laid in rubble. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I lost my train of thought, but it isn't a problem.
That are run and initiated by snipers, including things like the 93 when violence went up around the in Moscow. There was apparently snipers across the street from the American embassy firing at both sides. In Venezuela under Chavez, there was snipers firing at both sides. And this even into the Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring in Egypt and around there was snipers firing at both sides. So Democracy Now! Needs to cover this.
No kidding. I mean, can you imagine, Jeremy, if the Russians were sending their snipers into the United States and firing at both police and Black Lives Matter protesters, or sending their snipers in to, fire at the Antifa and the white nationalists. Actually, it's not Russia doing that. It's these same people, if anybody is. So we have a problem here. And the real meddlers, obviously, are not the Russians. The real meddlers are these deep state operatives who work for the U.S. Zionist Empire.
But don't let Alton Sterling and Philando Castile's name get covered up, because that was the effect. You saw this story suddenly change. You have... these live snuff films of the innocent by the guilty, and who are immune, and that is the story that is sidetracked, regardless of whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, speaking of the U.S. Zionist Empire and false flags, how about the next chemical attack in Syria? It could happen any day now. We have three trucks loaded with tons of chlorine entering Idlib from Turkey, according to reports from Al-Mustar News. So, Jeremy, I mean, this chemical weapons red line has been an omnipresent feature of the Syria situation. It's been the way the deep state got Obama, tried to get Obama to bomb Syria. He refused. To his credit, they got Trump to bomb Syria quite ineffectually, and they may be trying to ramp it up once again.
Yes, and the chaos and death in Syria should be firmly put at the feet of the U.S., Israel, and NATO in terms of instigating this situation. And that also includes Libya and all of that. And anyone trying to demonize an elected government for creating chaos in their own country is basically part of the war crimes going on.
And the situation in Syria remains extremely dangerous, as we talked about last week. In the next story, we see Turkey coming very close to out-and-out big-time war with Syrian troops who are moving in on the side of the Kurds. It seems to me that Turkey and Syria should be working together to try to stop the Yunnan plan from busting up the region and giving these various pieces to these Kurdish groups and so on. Unfortunately, they've got them. The divide and conquer strategy is working. And so Turkey and Syria are going after each other. And of course, the real winner of that is the Zionists.
The Kurds are always used by the latest, you know, political manager, whether it was the neocons in relationship to Iraq or now Turkey in relationship to Syria.
Okay, well, the war in Syria is not the only war that's not getting any better. Over in Afghanistan, the Taliban are asking the American people, because they have no hope that the American government is going to listen to them, but they're asking the American people to recognize that this war on Afghanistan has been a failure in every way, a moral failure, a strategic failure, a complete disaster. It's gone on longer than practically any war in history. Here we have a good piece by Jonathan Marshall pointing out that the Taliban is right. This war is nonsense. Their initial rationale was to go get bin Laden, yet they repeatedly let bin Laden escape. And whether he died in 2001 or whether the U.S. basically had him under so-called Pakistani house arrest, like Seymour Hersh says, I don't know. But it's obvious the rationale was pure BS.
I guess I can segue, because this trial I have on tape is the first Hiroshima day after we blew ourselves up in that bogus pretext only a fool or evil person would mouse believe in.
Alice Walker's whole speech and then some, but that's a really horrible sound. So while I'm reviewing that, I'm just going to kind of have it in the background, and if I hear something, then I'll pop back. It's what I played before. If you missed the beginning of the Mouse Report, it was the feds telling this dude I couldn't get within 50 yards of any federal property in North Concord. You know, so it's lots of fun. Hang on, it'll be worth it. But this is even funnier. This is the last great case of Bruce Van Voorhees. He got bumped down to traffic court because he couldn't tolerate female prosecutors. But even in Contra Costa, you know, he can only be so far right-wing. And so Attila the Hun has become a former judge. But here he is on November 13th. And this is pretty hilarious. Anybody who's ever been out to the tracks recently knows that it's completely fenced off. You cannot step off into the weeds in the federal weapons station there because they got a cyclone fence. And they paved over the tracks because there used to be a protection to traffic. You know, you couldn't just drive over railroad tracks. They're like 6 inches high. And you know, there's a nice cozy spot to sleep between them where only the train, the weapons train, would run you over, which you would want it. You want to make them do that, because they're in the wrong and they'll be prosecuted for murder, because you have a right to stand there when they're shipping weapons of mass destruction. Yeah. So anyway, so they gotta, like, this betrays everything that, you know, the founding mother rapers, so-called founding fathers have so-called established to keep the looters from plundering each other, you know. So the looters got to keep their act together, and so they have to have certain limits, and so you have to pretend, right? It's all about the sham, the facade, it's the cloak and dagger business. Yep, and we have cloak and dagger in this country, better believe it. And it's going on right here and now on my show in the form of this tape I just got, because this is so much better than the one they bogused up on the federal court. And in that case, the introductory, you know, the attorney for the CIA and me, I was per, you would recognize our voice, and then it gets all muffled, right, when they dub in the bogus version. Well, now they just probably digitally enhance it, because I really don't think Officer Brockert wants to say that he arrested me 25 foot through the cyclone fence on the other side at the beyond the edge of the road. But anyway.
This incident occurred on the 6th of August. That's 11:05 in the morning. That date and time, I was on patrol. I was dispatched to the Naval Weapons Station to contact their federal police officers there regarding a trespasser. While I was on the way to that call, I recall the briefing notice written by Lieutenant Rollison, and I also had a conversation with Lieutenant Rollison about a trespasser they had out there at the Naval Weapons Station. The briefing notice identified Mr. Getty. I spoke to Lieutenant Rollison, who also identified Mr. Getty, and it was clear that Mr. Getty was informed not to return to the Naval Weapons Station or he would be arrested. When I got to the Naval Weapons Station, I contacted both Mr. Getty and the Naval Weapons Station police officer, Chad Watson. Watson's also is a former reserve officer with the Concord Police Department. And he told me about the contact there. Mr. Gideon asked him why he was on Naval Weapons Station property. And our conversation was that he was there protesting Hiroshima Day. And his quote to me was that, I'm here to protest what has occurred, and if need be, I'm ready to be arrested. I arrested based upon Mr. Getty returning to property after being told to leave. His statements to me and the fact that he was trespassing on the property, he was on the lower portion of Naval Weapons Station property, approximately 25 feet from the roadway. I arrested him.
So you're going to hear me immediately after this say exactly what I recall saying, that, anyway, but everything that he said would cause me to seriously doubt my sanity if I really believed this is an accurate recording of what happened that day. And it doesn't make any sense, because you can't be 25 foot from the roadway out at the tracks without explaining how you get through that cyclone fence out into the grassy field.
For the municipal code section of 4135, and he was taken down to the city jail and processed and released on his written promise to appear.
And Mr. Getty, do you wish to ask questions?
At one point, to me to dispute, that's the use of the word property. Everything seems to be accurate except for that. You did say I was 25 foot from the center of the road, but there's a 60 foot right of way. You cannot get back and forth from Clyde without being on Naval Weapons Station property, if that's what you're going to call property, but it's not their property. The property line is where it says no trespassing. And we had a lengthy discussion on that. Officer is continuing to refer to it as Naval Weapons Station property. Other than that, he's accurate. But it's clearly a First Amendment violation not to allow me in a public right-of-way on Hiroshima Day, where the bombs came from, for that horrible act, those horrible acts that continue.
We can look into who owns the property. You think it's public property?
I think that when you walk to and from Clyde, you're not trespassing. And I offered to stand and walk back and forth so that my First Amendment rights to peaceably assemble, as I have under the First Amendment.
Okay, we're getting away from my question. So it's more that you think it should be public property because you need it to walk.
It's unconquered property.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm getting at. I can look into who owns the property if you want.
I don't know. This seems to be off the point. If we're going to say, okay, it's their property, how can they say that I can't walk across it if I don't agree with what they... If they don't like my political beliefs, they're saying I can't go and come from Clyde if the Naval Weapons Station don't like my political beliefs. There's a very robust, I have a case that shows that I did not trespass. I'd like to give this as evidence.
Yeah, sure. I'll take that.
I have the transcript written in longhand, you might find helpful. So I also have it on the audio tape. So that might be easier for you to verify that. You know, I don't think we need to argue about the facts of the case. Even if you're going to say this is the property of the Naval Weapons Station, I'm going to say it's a violation of my First Amendment rights. It says I can't have a sign that says closed pending destruction of weapons of mass destruction, which is what I had. Yeah. And I did shock, remember Hiroshima children murdered here, but was outside that line, and I wasn't, that was not the basis of this complaint. I had been arrested when I used spray paint for like a dozen times. I would come out on Nagasaki Day, because there's usually other protests on Hiroshima Day. And so on August 9th, I would write, remember Nagasaki children, standing with the guards there, and they could call the police. But eventually, they did. And the DNM prosecuted, but I stopped using paint. I went back to chalk.
That was for a wounded knee in Bethlehem.
They've been shipping weapons this year. And I blocked those weapons, and the DNM prosecuted me for that. See, that's the trespass charge. They charged me with trespassing for blocking the weapon. I can show you, there was a bank in Barlow, I don't know, it was supposed to last 3 years from September 99 during the East Timor Holocaust. So I blocked these missiles, and I think you can see, I blocked it when I was outside the no trespassing line, but the tail end was sticking out on Port Chicago Highway, so I crossed across the no trespassing line so that I wouldn't endanger the public. And when I had never been convicted, the first trial was an acquittal. So that was the basis, the Baron Mueller from the base. And I did not violate that in any way, as you can see on the tape. These are flyers from Nuremberg Actions. That's my picture. That's my PO box. Nuremberg Actions is a ongoing organization every Monday morning, most Monday mornings, I should say. Either me or other people will be out there to exercise our First Amendment rights. So I don't think there's any questions about the facts of the case, just this technical, if they want to call it their property, I have a memorandum of decision from the federal court saying this is county right-of-way. Now, it changed hands to the city of Concord, and that's why I'm dealing with Officer Brocker instead of the sheriffs here. I think they know me very well. I'd be happy to have you throw a look at me, because that videotape of me being arrested for peaceably assembling on the anniversary of that Holocaust, where the bomb came from, would be such a great story that I don't even want to argue against it.
The video is from another day, though, isn't it?
No, it's August 6th.
Oh.
That's Officer Brocker telling me that, it says, if I could just read the last little bit, that's a killer. Great, I got to arrest you again. Sure. Lieutenant Rollison told you you're not allowed back on this property. Does that mean I'm not allowed to walk from one side of the tracks to the other? Because you can arrest me for just, they told you you're not wanted. I know, I didn't go over this line. See, I've been arrested for crossing this line before, right? So you know you're not wanted out here, you're telling me. Okay, is that clear enough? It's because I'm not allowed out there. It's because I wasn't in my head, you know. I mean, you're going to have to shoot my brains out to change that.
Well, doesn't it matter if it's private property?
Well, then all the people inside are going to get arrested when they try to go pick up their kids from school. There's no way to get to Clyde except where I was, in the public right of way. Is there such a thing as a public right of way?
Well, I don't know. We can diagram it and see where it is.
All right.
That's what you're talking about? It's some kind of street or something?
There's a 60-foot public right-of-way on Fresh Chicago Highway at this location.
Well, you weren't on the street, were you?
Yes. It was a sidewalk. I wasn't standing in anybody's way.
You were on the sidewalk.
I was on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Well, it would help you to know exactly where you were.
Okay. I was at the tracks, and if you can picture the inland section and the tidal section, there's a set of train tracks that connects them and crosses Port Chicago Highway. I was on Port Chicago Highway, where my friend Bob Wick set off.
Okay, let's see if he agrees with you.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I told Mr. Getty, because we discussed his previous arrest for trespass, I said, if you want to stay on the roadway and have your signs and protest, that's fine.
This is DJ Mouse butting in. Now, at the time, I just walked out, or probably sat down, or, you know, and wrote. I don't remember any talk about a line. Now, I'm pretty questionable as a witness, but I just wrote down what I heard because it was so, you know, stunning and obviously bogus. But it wasn't going to work quite as well because he was arresting me for crossing that line. So he could pretend that the line wasn't visible, right? If you don't know, if you haven't been out there, you know, you could believe that I was 25 foot from the roadway that has a cyclone fence right up against it. And you could believe that there's no line when, you know, well, forget it. All right. Go out there.
You can't be on Naval Weapons Station property. You cannot return. And when you, yes, did the railroad tracks cross Port Chicago Highway? Absolutely. But he was off the roadway near the railroad tracks. And that's what
and this is completely fabricated.
What was that with respect to that no trespassing line? The yellow line that was a couple of feet just west of us.
Because there are signs posted everywhere on Naval Weapons Station property. And to use the analogy that, well, if there's a sign on that wall, even if there's a fence here, I can't go past that wall. It's not a good analogy to use.
Well, I think we need to talk about it. Just because...
Yeah, sure. You can use it. I haven't used that yet. That would
I hate for this wonderful opportunity to demonstrate. Not only do we have weapons of mass destruction, we cannot even keep it assembled to protest. So here's the town of Clyde, okay? Here's the naval weapons station. And it's in two sections. Okay, so there's a railroad that connects these, right? And there's a...
towards Chicago Highway, even though they bought out the part near the nukes up here. Okay, so I was sitting, now there's this 30 foot from the center of the road to the edge of the county right away, right? Okay, it's stipulated in the federal order of permit injunction. There is a 60 foot right away. The road is, I don't know, but anyway, we were both outside of the no trespassing line that's on the edge of this highway. We were sitting here, and the road, let's just, this is the road, and then there's a pretty wide water along here. And usually people like to assemble here, but I like to sit smack right in between the tracks because you cannot express resistance better than Brian Wilson did. He was a lawyer. And he knew that the law was on his side when we were on in the Contras. Nothing has changed. You know, now we call our Contra, you know, I don't know, the Northern Alliance? No, whatever you want. But, you know, we continue to have weapons of mass destruction. You know, the base uses depleted uranium munitions. They have 15,000...
Well, let's stick to whether it's trespassing.
Okay.
I'm not here to dabble in politics.
But then let's... right.
So the map won't work?
Yeah, this little X.
So how many feet from the center of the road do you think you were?
25 foot room. Well, as long as we'll stipulate a 60 foot county right of way, then I'll say I was 5 foot... I was 5 foot... east of the no trespassing sign on the west side of Port Chicago Highway.
Okay, and then I asked you, if you're listening, how far from the center of the roadway were you?
Well, if it's 30 foot from that line to the center of the roadway, I'll say I was 25 foot. And then I think we could agree.
All right, let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, my testimony was he was 25 foot from the edge of the roadway, not the center.
Yeah, and so the roadway itself would add how many more feet?
A complete fabrication, folks. Don't believe everything you hear on the radio.
Okay.
But go out to the weapon station and see how can you be 25 foot from the roadway when there's a cyclone fence there near the tracks.
I had to cross that line when I was 5 feet away from it. I got to play the tape and we can hear it.
Well, sure. I can hear him and I can ask him about that and he can explain. Let's give him a chance to explain. And you can return here because I think we're done with the diagram, right? Yeah. I'll give you a chance to explain that now.
Okay, what would you like me to explain, Your Honor?
Well, what he said, the point he made was that he thinks that it's important to note how far away he was from this no trespassing line, so to speak, and so you can comment upon whether such a line exists and where he was in relationship.
I don't recall a no trespassing line being on. I don't recall a naval weapon station having a painted line.
Can you believe this, folks?
But not this side. I don't recall that line being.
Okay.
Can we listen to our conversation?
Sure. You can recite it to him again and see if he recalls it.
I have it on the tape that I dug from that.
Well, I thought you also had it written down as a transcript.
I do, but it's nice to hear his voice. It's
well, shouldn't I be able to control the proceedings rather than you?
Well, I offered this as evidence. If it's not going to be examined, then I'll just
I didn't say that, Mr. Getty.
Because it's
Mr. Getty, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I'm a very precise person. You need to listen to what I'm saying, because I'm protecting the proceedings.
And you need to not believe the transcript, because the transcript says, I'll just remain silent because this is the trial. Well, I don't know. That could be a legitimate mistake rather than intentional, because it doesn't make any sense, you know. I'll just remain silent because we have the right to remain silent during our trials, you know. We no longer have the right to remain silent anywhere else. Anyway, obviously I said I'll remain silent because this isn't a real trial. This isn't a trial, I said. So anyway. Bye.
I asked you, don't you just have a transcript of it?
Right.
That's why I'm going to just recite it to him.
Okay. Well,
you can
probably read that. Does that match what you recall?
If you can't read it, then he can read it out loud to you.
No, I can read
it. Okay.
Did you want to read it out loud, or?
No, that's okay. You can comment on that. He thinks that there's an admission within that transcript that you were a certain number of feet away from the trespass line.
There's no mention of feet in here. His argument in this transcript, if I'm correct, is that he cannot walk from one side of the tracks to the other. And that's not the area of contention.
Mm-hmm. You can go I'll hear from him again. I'll hear from him again. So what's up?
Well, what's wrong right here? Actually, that didn't sound like
go over this line. See, I've been arrested for crossing that line before, right? And he says, so you know you're not lying out here. The fact that, see, I told him I was not crossing that line and it was not disputed.
Now he's heard what you're talking about. I'll ask him. Did you make such a remark about a line?
No, he made a remark.
That is what you're telling me.
You're saying I can't come to protest. That's what you're saying.
No, you can protest all you want as long as you do so legally.
The other side of the train tracks. On the other
like
side.
If you sat like down
on the inlet.
The...
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, I gotta say that again. Since the judge in that trial didn't let me play this audio from this video. Oh, here's a truck running in here. The driver claimed I broke the bump screen. And then the cop who arrested me for it saw that the... or he heard that the truck accelerated.
Right, right. He actually said, I told him where I was coming. He said,
take
well,
him away.
It's not Greg.
Yeah.
He's abiding the law. He knows the law out there. You should arrest him.
Oh, no. Listen, that was for writing and paint. This is chalk. Now, if you want to watch me go wipe it off, I had no conception anybody would be offended by chalk on Hiroshima Day, educating the children of what their parents do.
Well, I'm not questioning your values of this, but I'm saying...
He doesn't know it was chalk, please.
Could you educate more people being someplace other where trains don't go? You can tell... See this?
Nothing could educate... Nothing in the world could possibly educate people better than the weapon for Hiroshima came from this base. And this is the anniversary. The United States of America murdered the children of Hiroshima.
Right, that's when the United States won that war.
Murdered the children. No, they had agreed to the same conditions that were accepted after the bombing was obviously to show Russians that we didn't care about military necessity. We would kill their children by the millions. And that's how we won the Cold War. So you understand, I don't need any of that money. In fact, I don't need any of that life. I would rather be dead. If you're going to say you're going to pull your gun and shoot me in the head, if I don't immediately get up out of the way, I'll say this is a good day to die.
So are you going to harm yourself?
No. I would harm myself by cooperating with murder.
Can you hang one second there?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry.
At a certain point, you got to say, I can't live with that, sir. I'm supposed to step into harm's way. Not run like lily-livered cowards saying you're going to murder all those children in Hiroshima and Nagasaki because the American serviceman is too pissing cowardly to go stick their necks out.
Oh, that was the first Hiroshima Day after the bogus pretext for the endless war in Afghanistan.
Cosimato, the great Italian jurist, who just passed away and is memorialized here at ae911truth.org. We have the next story. The University of Hawaii at Maui is the site of apparently a shutdown of a professor who wants to review Professor Hulsey of University of Alaska's findings on Building 7, which, of course, you don't have to be an engineering professor to notice is obviously not a random collapse from a couple of minor office fires, but it's obviously a classic controlled demolition.
As I pointed out before, my three-year-old son, when he was three-year-old a few years ago, he walked by when he was watching video of the trade towers turning to dust. He said, Dad, why is that building turning to dirt?